Yeah, well, I agree with a lot of what James said there. I think there's really are two strategic tasks facing the workers' movement in Ireland. One is the unionisation of the workforce, particularly dealing with the question of the multinationals, breaking the consensus with the existing trade union leaders that there will be no unionisation, and those who will not attempt to unionise there. And also the question of transforming the existing unions. So I'd agree with James, and in fact it's a line which he used to recruit me to the IWU, is that the IWU could play a role in building up a network of activists inside the unions. I agree that it's a strategy of attempting to take positions inside the existing unions and reform or radicalise the existing trade union structure would be a mistaken one. But as James referred to, there are still many workers in those unions in a formal sense. They are members of those. And that we need to have some way of building up a network of activists who can operate nominally within the formal structure of the union, but in a way to organise those members of those unions in a real sense. Because the other strategic question of unionising the vast mass of workers who are not unionised, an important component of that will be our ability to show that there is a real alternative in unionisation, because at the moment, 20 years of social partnership and the unions effectively policing class struggle on behalf of the bosses. I mean, certainly my workmates have no conception of the union as a fighting instrument at all. And we need to change that and that will be done not only by strengthening organisations like the IWU, but by building networks inside the existing trade union structure amongst the membership, which will be a fake action. I think you're looking at wildcat action there initially. One other thing that you said, Aim, was about the need to have a credible alternative economic strategy. I'm not so sure about that as being the central alternative vision that those of us who will call ourselves militant trade unionists or revolutionaries should be presenting. Because the idea of a credible economic alternative has a very strong dynamic towards providing a formal solution to the problems which we face under capitalism. What's credible? Who decides what's credible? For me, the only credible economic solution is the expropriation of the bourgeoisie and the beginning of the reorganisation of society on a socialist basis, based on organisations of the working class and aspects of democracy, or workers' democracy, along the workers' council model. And that is the only credible alternative. But that's more a political question, I think, than an economic one. Because it's difficult for us to be able to project what would that look like. Now, how you pay for that question is one we cannot expect to be able to respond to in a detailed, costed manner with, oh, the money, we're going to have this much money to do this much money to do that, as you hear in elections. What we say is that the central question is who runs things, whose interest are the decisions made. It's a political rather than an economic question. We expropriate the bourgeoisie. We stop them from siphoning off huge proportions of society's wealth into profits in their bank accounts all over the world. We stop the wastage of capitalist society and stupid things like advertising in the arms industry. We have a planned economy. But people are going to say that's not credible because it's not fully costed and fully detailed. I am very wary about trying to go down that path of producing a credible economic alternative, because it can get very easily sucked into the politics of reformism.
Can I just respond to that? The only credible alternative economic strategy, honestly, is socialism. The kind of socialist model is open to very serious debate. But I'll just give one example where the independent workers union found itself in a position whereby an alternative economic model had to be looked at. We had a case where somebody was in the union, the company was in the community and voluntary sector, and the first off they wanted to cut wages and cut hours. Obviously you were totally opposed to that. Now we entered into, this doesn't happen very often, negotiations with the particular organisation involved. And surprise, surprise, they actually supplied us with the figures. Look, that's it. That's what we're making every week at the moment. And here's the financial data for last year. And here's the projections for next year. And we had a very, very serious, good look at it. And the company did have, I hate to say it, a case for having to do something because they were becoming unviable. We were able to sit down with them and come up with a different strategy and a different economic model whereby the worker in the union was able to keep the hours that they had and didn't have to suffer a pay cut. Now that's something on a very micro level. That does not happen very, very often, I can assure you, within the independent workers' union. But it's the kind of problem that's been landed on the desk in 55 North Main Street on a regular basis now. A lot of companies will open the books to you and say, well, look, that's it. What do you do as a trade unionist in that regard? It's a very, very serious problem. Because there's lots of companies out there, capitalists or not, who are literally going to go down. And how do you deal with a union member who's facing a pay cut and always been cut? The strategy we've adopted so far is that people get put on short time. So if you're working for 2-3 day a week, at least you can go in the claim for 2 days from social work time. That's the best way to do it. Or if it's in the community involuntary sector, that you literally shut the fucking thing down for 2 months or 3 months if you have to. Shut it down completely. And then start up again when the final comes back in. But these are decisions that the IWU has had to put out as alternative economic strategies on the micro level. On the macro level, let's take the debt. How many young workers in the country are really screwed, and pardon my French, for paying massive mortgages? There is one solution to this. It's just a small interim one. If an account could be opened, and it's some sort of escrow account within the credit unions, for people to pay X percent of their mortgage into that and keep it there, and then refuse to pay your mortgage provider, your lender, on it, you'd very soon see them jumping. And something would happen at political level. Because the money is there, they're just not getting it. They're not getting it now. They might get it in 2-3 years. Do what they did up in Lupin, as I pointed out earlier on. Put the money into escrow until this whole political financial mess with vis-a-vis mortgages particularly is talked about. Because no young person in this country who was forced, and they were forced, yeah, through an awful lot of pressure. I know that the argument is you go in and you take out a loan, you go into your eyes wide open. But an awful lot of people in this country, particularly young couples, were told in no uncertain terms by the government that if you don't buy a house now at this price, it's never going to come down again. This is the best you're ever going to get. This boom is going to continue. Now, in fairness, an awful lot of young workers or people don't have degrees in fucking economics. And they believe this nonsense that they get from the capitalists. Well, they did take up massive mortgages. And now they're literally screwed. And it's a very, very, very serious problem all over the country. But if an action like that was taken and coordinated properly, you'd soon see the jitters, both from the banks and the lending institutions, but from political levels as well.
Sorry.
Hello.
Come in. Do you want to go first?
Yeah, I've always seen the independent workers' union as being totally different to all the others.
And one of the main things is that their union offices, both sets of them in Shear Street and in North Main Street, are available to any group, any community or different group that needs them. And there's no charge. You know, you can meet there quite openly and free of charge. I think that's a wonderful thing to have. And I also think that the fact that the IWU has no objection to groups using their address for correspondence is a marvellous thing. That, for instance, we found now in the Cork Anti-Racism Network that if you were writing a letter to anyone, like, say, the Minister for Justice or whatever, sometimes if a person is an asylum seeker, they mightn't wish to put their name down on the letter, or they mightn't wish to put any address down either. And it's a very useful thing to have, you know, a general address in the middle of the town that you can get all this correspondence sent to. Because a lot of people in vulnerable positions feel afraid to put their heads above the parapet. They're afraid of reprisals, and they're just in such a bad situation from the start anyway. Mm-hmm. So that for a start. And I think other areas, like if you're going to look actively for extra members, I'm a retired law clerk, and in this town, in my lifetime, and I've been an apprentice law clerk since 1965, there has never been unionised labour in that trade, ever. And yet when something happens, before the IWU, they joined, say, a mandate or some union like that, and then once their dispute was fixed, they'd leave the union. You know, they didn't see the union as offering them anything. And I've argued over the decades with my own colleagues to actually organise themselves to join a union. They would have had better pay, better conditions, safer workplaces, everything like that. And they've never actually got around to it. And the pay is really low. Law clerks don't get paid very much, or legal secretaries, or any of the other workers in solicitors or barristers' offices. And that continues to be the situation. So you have whole groups of a whole sector that is, you know, there for the taking, if you could persuade them. That, and I think a union like the IWU can persuade them, because it's broader, it's much more than a trade union. It's active in all social activities and in various demands that working class people make. It's involved in every campaign. It, you know, you see the IWU banner in every march in this town. So I think if it's not done now, well, it's not done by the IWU. I've never in my lifetime seen members of a trade union. So I'd like to see that, something like that happen.
Okay, let's turn to now, I think, to Gray and Alan, and if anyone else come in, you know, leave with that.
I just going to get your
hands.
I think actually Margaret actually hit on my point there, but the point I wanted to make about, or the point I, or that I wanted to offer for discussion, you know, the you know, say the trade union movement to make, I think it has to go out and start to nearly evangelise the, you know, the workplaces and evangelise people as well too, that, you know, the you know, the union has to, you know, the unions have to sell themselves, and the you know, and they have to offer something as well too, beyond, you know, an insurance policy for workers, you know, if you got a wee bit of trouble in the workplace, that, and you know, the sort of a broader vision, I think, for society as well too, that, you know, that the say, you know, defending the wage relation, or, you know, sort of intervening in the wage relation, isn't the be all and end all of, you know, trade union activity. That, you know, say, to give an example, if you look back at, say, the foundation of the Irish Transport and General Workers Union, was that they were involved in many things, from, you know, weekend excursions for children,
education, yeah,
mm-hmm. and education to military
social community. Development, yeah, sure,
mm-hmm. you know, and that, you know, that whole side of the trade union movement has been lost, I think, in the whole sort of, you know, sort of focus on, you know, sort of the wage relation and, you know, mm-hmm. you know, looking after people's, you know, sort of, what do you call it, you know, sort of dry economic interests, you know, with regard to the wages and conditions, etc. I think one of the most valuable things, in fact, that the Independent Workers Union is doing at the moment is the you know, the is providing membership of the trade union as well to people without jobs, because as Dave Higgins pointed out at the march today, is that, you know, that the Independent Workers Union is the only, is one of the few, I'd probably say the only trade union in Ireland that recognises unemployed men and women as workers without jobs. I mean, it was one of the things as well too, now, and this is before I got seriously politicised, you know, and I remember this from the end of the 80s, beginning of the 90s, one of the things that I didn't like about the whole partnership process was in its inception and the way it worked out was its withdrawal from, I think, people without jobs and from, you know, sort of wider social engagements. Mm-hmm. And I suppose those are my points as such. And
yeah, I would just like to respond to Margaret and to say thank you for your kind comments. The mail facilitation is known in Russian as a dubok, a dead letter drop, and you're more than welcome to visit any time. And the same goes for organisations. We just ask you to leave the place as you find it. Your point about the social partnership and all that, the funny thing is, if you take the trouble to read social partnership agreements, is that besides the paying conditions, there's quite a lot in the agreements as well to do with actual social engagement,
yeah.
But they never implemented.
Yeah.
Because all they do is concentrate only on the paying condition and then do the rest of it, you know. And the other thing that I just would like to say, like people to ponder on it, is I take the trouble to read a Labour Relations Commission report that comes out every year from Kieran Mulvey. Now, don't get me wrong, Kieran Mulvey is no exact friend of the IWU. But he does have some interesting things to say, and he's been saying the same paragraph has gone into his annual report every year for the last 6 years, you know? And it's really interesting, paragraph 7 I think it is, you know? And it states quite categorically that 60% of all cases going before the Labour Relations Commission needn't be going there at all, because they're all to do with TEPI, Terms and Conditions of Employment Information Act. And it's all because employers can't be bothered or asked to give employees a written contract of employment within 2 months of starting off. 60% of their work would be done away with if the employers only gave what they're supposed to be doing in terms of contracts and so on. He also said something else last month, by the way, which is very, very disturbing. He came out and he made it perfectly clear for the government that they don't have enough staff to deal with the avalanche, he described it, of cases coming in, and he was making it clear that unless certain things changed within his staffing of the LRC, that there was a very strong possibility that the majority of the cases going in and have been lodged so far might not ever get heard. That's one to ponder.
Yeah, I think hanging your example of the micro example is important, and it points to strength of unions, but it also points to the weakness of unions as regards social transformation. Because the unions, even radical militant unions like the IWU, are forced to deal within the existing framework. That's their job. That's the social role, is to fight for the best deal for workers within the current construct. So I think that side by side with militants being organised inside the unions, we need a separate revolutionary organisation, which was, you know, opens up other questions. But I think in a general sense, the social role of unions means that they are not in of themselves the agency for overall social change. And I think that leads on to problems with unions trying to take on or present a general social program for macro questions. Really, I think that's the role of a revolutionary organisation, which has as its basis the transformation of society, whereas a union necessarily, because of its nature, has defence of workers against attacks and sometimes even extension of workers' rights within the current system.
I would disagree. I think a trade union can be the perfect vehicle for revolutionary social change. How does it keep that? Get that?
A few short points. First of all, I think it's more necessary for workers that are working on a business side or a factory floor or office, wherever, to fight negativity among their comrades, their brothers and sisters, because there was not been negativity out there, and the sort of negativity that I've heard in the past was people said, "Oh, the unionists, fuck all good, they do fuck all for you," and that's not a talk. And I remember once that said that to me one day, and I'm not sure what the pay at the time was. Let's say the pay at the time was €15 or £15 an hour, say, and I said to him, "How much? What's your wages, Dan? How much an hour are you getting?" And he said something like, "Oh, 15. And I said, "We'd be lucky to get 10 hours if there wasn't for a union, you know." And I think that it's important to talk to people like that, you know. The other thing is direct action, lightning strike where necessary. And the strikes that I've seen more successful have been lightning strikes. So one case down in the dockyard, where a maintenance electrician that was on that night, putting up the temporary light, he did his job, he called out, got the lights working, went back to his hut, he sort of snoozed off, he sort of fell asleep, and there was a Dutch director came down, the temporary lights weren't working when he came down. Went down, knocked on the door, the man got up immediately, got his tools, went up, got the lights working again. The next day that man came in, there was a note on his car, reported personnel, he was told he was fired on the spot. Electrician is down there, hit the gate immediately, and the man was taken back. Now, there were two charge hands that destroyed, lightning strike, there was two that didn't, and those men were boycotted, and everything that did, if they were told to do this, people just ignored them. Once they came over, tried to bully me, and I told them to fuck off. I said, "I'm too busy instead of doing my job, doing temporary life." And those two charge hands went up to management, and they said the men won't do what they've been told. And the management would say, "Well, you're no good to us, so." And the two of them split. You know,
Thanks, 10 minutes of the back of the camera, and now it's